Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, once again, a very special guest, our Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin L. Bragg, Jr. He's the 37th District Attorney elected in Manhattan. Alvin was born and raised in Harlem, and for more than two decades, he has served as both state and federal prosecutors working to make our communities safer, a criminal justice system fairer. As district attorney, Alvin restructured the Manhattan DA's office to focus more resources on prosecuting serious violent crimes, which resulted in a 40% drop in shootings during his first 2 years in office. Immediately upon taking office, Alvin created post-conviction justice unit to reinvestigate closed cases where there are credible claims of innocence or unjust conviction. Alvin also created the first special victims division in Manhattan DA's office, as well as the Survivor Services Bureau. Perhaps the most significant change to the office during Alvin's first year was the creation of a new division called Pathways to Public Safety, which addresses the problem of repeat offenders and includes mental health treatment. Alvin also created the office's first worker protection unit, as well as the office's first housing and tenant protection unit to prosecute unscrupulous companies and landlords that take advantage of hardworking New Yorkers. In addition, Alvin expanded the hate crimes unit, adding prosecutors, investigators, and community partnership coordinators. Prior to becoming district attorney, Alvin served as district assistant attorney general in New York State and as assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. In these roles, Alvin handled a wide array of criminal cases, from armed robbery to public correction. Alvin earned his bachelor's from arts from Harvard University and JD from Harvard Law School. He also went on to clerk for the Honorable Robert P. Patton Jr. in the Southern District of New York. Alvin is a member of the Board of Directors of New York Urban League and Lawyers. Alvin also teaches Sunday school at his church. I read that long bio because it was worth reading, and everybody needs to know the inner workings of our Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, Jr. Welcome back to Reaching Out.
Great to be here. Great to be here. I always appreciate talking with you. I'm looking forward to today.
Thank you. Thank you. And just one thing before we get into it. We're taping this on Monday, and hopefully the Knicks will win tonight. And we share that long history of being a New York Knicks fan. So,
I can feel a victory coming. I can feel a victory coming. Going up 3-1 would be huge.
And most importantly, winning the series would be even huger.
Yes.
You recently announced the indictment of a talent agency and its CEO for stealing wages from hard-working New York City actors. Can you share more about that case and speak to how your office is rooting out this kind of conduct to ensure workers are getting their fair pay?
Definitely. I mean, this has been a priority here. I've really focused on expanding our worker protection. Historically, we've done a number of cases in the construction industry. We've continued those, but we've extended it to retail and other industries to protect our workers. It's basic, honest day's work, honest dollar. Employers are not paying, or they're paying criminally low wages. We're going to hold you accountable. In this case, is illustrative of that. It was a talent agency called KMR, and the head, Mark Measures, indicted for allegedly stealing $1.8 million from 160 actors and employees. So as always, we're extraordinarily grateful to the workers who came forward. It takes a lot of courage to do that, particularly against their employer, who's got so much power over their day to day. And here, you know, coming forward against a talent agency as the actors and some of the agency's employees. If you don't mind, I would love to give our number that people can call for wage theft.
No, by all means, this is informational purposes. Please, all the information you want to give us, we want to hear.
Great. Well, so anyone thinks they've been a victim of either worker wage theft issues or worker safety issues, you can contact our office at 646-712-0298.
Okay, just once again, slowly, and tell them what the office number is for.
Sure. So the office number is, if you believe you may have been a victim of a wage theft, so you worked and your employer didn't pay your wages or paid you far lower than they were supposed to, or if you're working in an unsafe work environment, this is the number you can call. In Manhattan, our Manhattan District Attorney's Office to address that kind of workplace conduct. That number is 646-712-0298.
Wonderful. And also, it probably could be found on your website also.
Definitely. Man, www.manhattanda.org.
Thank you. So for years, sheds have plagued our city streets. Not only are they unsightly, but they present a safety hazard. I understand that you work with the city council member, Key Powers, who has been outspoken about this issue and pushed for the city to reform its scaffolding and sidewalk shed laws. Tell us about this legislation and why it's so important. First, tell us what the sheds are.
Definitely. Well, look, you know, anyone who's, you know, we and I were talking, we've been New Yorkers a long time. We're talking about the Knicks.
Yes.
The sheds are these, you know, you walk around, I think we call them scaffolding. Been there 5-10 years. What's going on? Keith Powers and the city council came together and said, look, we've got to address this issue. As you said, from my perspective, it's not just unsightly. We've had investigations where the scaffolding was blocking a camera that could have helped us with the case. We've also seen that when the scaffolding or sheds are removed, that if there was, you know, maybe some sort of disorder that was there, that goes away as the sunlight comes in. So that was our interest in this. And so we joined with the city council and Councilman Keith Powers in helping push for that. And, you know, happy to see it become law of the land, if you will. And I know it's going to help with the visuals, but most importantly, from my perspective, help with our public safety.
Makes sense, because you go by how many people feel unsafe going underneath for scaffolding. One, for what might fall on them. Two, for who's hanging out under and around those sheds.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get people who move in and they use that as their homes also.
Yeah, and you hit a good point, right? So yeah. This is a law that will mean that they won't stay up as long and has some other provisions, but still the core safety provisions, you know, when there's active construction, things like that going on, but just make sure they don't stay up, you know, longer than is necessary.
That's right, right. And then there's a cost to it too, especially in the New York City Housing Authority. I often wonder why they stay up for years and they pay monthly fees on all of those sheds. That's money being thrown away. So it's get the work done, get them down, because they don't stay up there for free.
That could have been our slogan. Get the work done, get them down.
Get them down.
That would have been a good one.
It's yours. You can still use it. It's yours. So last month was Sexual Violence Awareness Month. And you announced some notable cases. Can you talk more about these cases and how your office is supporting survivors?
Definitely. And you said this up front. We talked about how we've restructured the office. We now have a special victims division that's a standalone one where we're kind of housing the expertise all in one division, really centering the well-being of survivors. We've expanded our counselors and our advocates our Survivor Services Bureau, the ones that provide counseling and other services to victims and witnesses. And that has been so key. The specific cases, and it was, these are heartbreaking, matters. We indicted an attorney on a 116 count indictment for alleged predatory sexual assault of six women in his apartment. When we announced that, we made a call for other survivors to come forward. Again, noting the advocates and counselors we have in the office are free of charge and then without regard to whether your case goes forward. So we're here to assist. And again, you mentioned the website. There's more information on how manhattanda.org.
Whether your case goes forward or not, there's still services available if you're a victim of sexual violence.
And even more broadly than that, we've got if you're the victim of gun violence, an assault, our counselors and advocates are here and available, truly expert and trained in addressing trauma whenever I'm with them, which is often when we're talking to victims around the community, talking about the services, you can sort of feel their expertise. I will say one thing that I'm particularly proud of here in Manhattan during my time, we've expanded their capacity and given them real primacy such that our emergency services are up 250%. So the amount of services that we're providing in that sort of initial, often crisis period, up 250%. So I'm very proud of that group and the work today.
People are really using this component of your office.
Yes, and it's one of the reasons I'm so grateful to talk to people like yourself and be out in front of your listeners so they know we're here, right? We want people to know we're here. We're here to help.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters, with a very special guest once again is a Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg Jr., and he's talking about the component of his office other than prosecutorial uses of the office, because mostly you hear the district attorney, you say, oh, I'm going to get prosecuted. But what he's saying is the district attorney has a multitude of services available to help the individuals. What are some of the other components of your office that you have besides the gun violence and sexual violence that can help Manhattan that we don't know about?
We have a Harlem office on 125th Street. We have an office in Washington Heights, community offices. People can walk right in. They each have an advocate or a counselor present, but also other community resources. They can, if someone comes into our office, we can let them know about other resources the government has to offer. In addition, sometimes people will come in and maybe something they don't necessarily always think about as a crime. People, for example, don't think about a wait step issue as a crime all the time. But we also have a new tenant protection unit. So someone will come in, maybe they're going next door to another government office here about housing services, but they come to us and we'll say, no, this we will investigate. This may be a criminal matter. But we also are offering, particularly, I've been really made it a priority, gun violence. I had a number of gunpoint incidents myself as a child. And we've made great strides the last 3 years. Shootings are down about 45% in Manhattan. Homicides are down 20%. But we know there's a lot more work to do, particularly for our youth. And so we have each of the last couple of summers, and we're going to do it again this summer and expand it, done a anti-gun youth initiative where we provide stipends to our youth who are working with community-based organizations that are directly addressing gun violence. Dave and I, I spend time with these young people, and
yes,
one project is they were doing anti-violence rap music in a studio. Another one right in the center of Harlem, they were doing from farm to plate, you don't think about Harlem as having a place where you grow your meal, but they're doing it right there, farm to plate, some doing murals, beautifying areas. And so working you know, with this, we know the summer months can be hot. Violence can often spike. We want to have them doing things that are nurturing and also that are giving back to the community under the watchful eye. Some of these great mentors, you know, it's not just, you know, us here in the office, but having people who are the mentors right there in the community helping them. So that's something else that we're doing that people may not know about. And I'll mention just one last thing.
Yes.
We're excited about this. We started this in August. We have a not-for-profit that we pay to be in our courtroom so that when someone is arraigned, if you know they make bail or the recent recognizance, they leave. The group is called Fortune Society. Some may know it. They say, hey, what do you need? What do you need? Do you need food? What do you need? Do you need MetroCard? You need something? What do you need? And we're already starting to see the benefits of it. This is folks who may not come back to the next court date, right? History will show us, may not have a home to go to, and they said, oh, come back next Thursday for your court date. But with the support of Fortune, they get stabilized. And so it helps them, but it helps our public safety because otherwise we would learn about them perhaps on the next arrest. But now they're stabilized. And the number one thing that Fortune's able to do, which I think is one of the most transformative things we have going on, is if the person is in need of housing, they can take them straight from the courtroom to transitional housing. Again, help stabilize them and it helps reduce recidivism, so it helps all of us.
Now, is this the first of its kind in New York City?
I'm not familiar of another program like this.
Okay.
It is something that what we've done in Manhattan before and what we're doing here is we do this, we just started in August. We measure the success. We think it's a good idea. We think we have a great organization we're partnering with. We think it's a good idea and will work. And then we track it. We look at the data, how many touches, how many people took advantage of the services, what was the effect of the services. And so we're in the process of tracking that. You know, when we hit the 1 year mark, we'll report out. And I can see this being something that we go to the city council and say, look, it worked here. We paid for it out of our own funds. We'd like it to be appropriated out of the city budget. And then if other boroughs want to do something like it, there will be a template with metrics of success there to duplicate.
Now, I would imagine that, of course, there's a cost to this, but it's an investment. And it sounds like you're getting, and what we say, the bang for the buck. You're having less people come to courts, which means the system is being taxed less. You have less prosecutors working on those cases. You have less police officers, or less law enforcement making these arrests. And you have people moving on, doing something else in society besides coming to court and getting a criminal record. They're getting help. It's invaluable.
It is something that is working well. We'll continue to measure it. But it's exactly as you said. It's these interventions that can go such a long way, and it's everyone benefits, right? Because the person gets stabilized and they don't commit another crime.
You know, this is the first time I'm hearing of the program. I like the program, and say if you have some philanthropists out there and they wanted to donate to your program because they like what you hear, is there a way they can donate?
You know, I not that I'm aware of, particularly the DA's office, but our hope is to sort of package this and then present it to, city and state lawmakers, and that might be an appropriate time to sort of, as you said, which I think that's a phenomenal idea. I hadn't thought about that, but we in a town with great philanthropists, and so I think that's a phenomenal idea.
Sure. Are there any programs this summer for youth that you know of that you are putting on?
Yeah, so we're gonna do our anti-gun youth grants again. We're expanding the program, and we're structuring the program to encourage smaller groups to partner with one another. One thing that I saw when I was meeting with the groups is that sometimes they didn't know each other. They were doing phenomenal work in nearby neighborhoods, and so we want to incentivize groups to work together, get some economies of scale, cross-pollinate ideas. So we're we're going to do that again. And then, you know, we partner with DYCD, the Youth Community Development, and the NYPD to run Saturday Night Lights. That runs, you know, throughout the year. And so that's another good program. Do a lot of work also with the Police Athletic League.
So tell us about Saturday Night Lights. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, it started out kind of incubated in my office here, focused initially on basketball. It's grown to not just be in Manhattan, but to be citywide, and grown from basketball to volleyball. I tweaked my shoulder. I got spiked on by some young people. I didn't get dunked on, though. Let's be clear about that. That hasn't happened. And also, you know, art and other cultural programs. But really, it's the idea is getting young people into a space, as the name suggests, you know, up and going on Saturday nights with mentors, you know, supported by Police Athletic League and local precincts, doing activities that kids should be doing, right?
Right.
Having fun, playing sports, engaging in arts, doing it in a safe environment, and doing it, you know, often when I go to the sites, what I love is that people are mixed together. You know, it's not all one from one housing development or the other, but we have people mixed together. And I've, you know, I've been told I go to sites, sometimes it's like, these are folks who might not otherwise interact because of some of the pressures from the neighborhood, but here in this safe space, they can.
It's very good. It's very excellent. Excellent. Sounds nice. Saturday Night Lights. Any final thoughts? Anything that we didn't cover? Anything that you normally don't get asked that you say, I wish somebody would ask me this. Or I had an opportunity to talk about X or Y.
You know, the one issue we didn't talk about, which I will say we're doing a lot of work in, and I want to kind of underscore, is ghost guns. Ghost guns are non-serialized guns, so they're in law enforcement. We can't track them. They don't have serial numbers. And we're seeing more and more, whether it's our gun buybacks or our gun prosecutions, more people using ghost guns. You can, you know, buy a 3D printer and get the parts and print it out from your kitchen table and circumvent our strong gun laws. And so we're working with Senator Brad Wilman-Siegel and Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal on a bill that would criminalize the manufacture of ghost guns. Possession of ghost gun is illegal, possession of a gun, but with the manufacture, if you sit from your kitchen table and you print out 100 of these, and we're more and more seeing these ends up in the hands of kids. And the name ghost gun may sound, you know, it's like it's not a gun, it's a gun. And if you get shot by a ghost gun versus a gun, you're not going to know the difference. And it's dangerous. And, you know, we actually engaged with YouTube earlier this year because we learned from some of our cases, some young people who got guns in their possession. How'd you learn about this? And so I was playing video games. I was watching video games on YouTube, and I kept clicking. The algorithm was driving these young people on showing them how to build ghost guns. And so we engage with YouTube and getting to change their algorithm. So that's kind of thing that combining our prosecution work to get these guns off the street, but going beyond that and saying, well, how'd they get there in the first place, and making some of these corporate actors take responsibility.
Sure. That's very good. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. You're welcome to come back anytime. Anytime you want to give a message, you're welcome to come back. You don't have to wait for an invitation. You can just call up. And we'll put you on because we always like to hear what the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has to say. So you have a standing invitation, and thank you very much for coming back on and reaching out.
Thank you so much. I'll definitely take you up on that. I appreciate it. Great talk with you.
Great
talk. And go Knicks tonight. Go Knicks tonight. We'll go get that win.
Go Knicks. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237, and very special guest, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg Jr. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.